Thank you all for being here tonight. I really appreciate your presence here. And I think several of you are new tonight, first timers, and you all know that this is the fifth of five classes. So we're going to be doing some general reviews that you should, hopefully you will still get something out of it. But please know that if you hear some things that sound kind of weird or terms that you're not familiar with, that are, they are things that we've already reviewed. And if you have any confusions that really are bothering you, please come to me after class and ask me about it. Okay? There's a few more people coming in, so we'll wait. Let me get myself a chair. So our plan for tonight, we're going to start out like we usually do, reviewing a few basic meditation techniques. And then we're going to just talk a little bit in general about what Buddhism is, the attitude that we strive for in Buddhism. And then we're going to talk about prayers, which is something that is important for just about everybody, whether it's all the different faiths, even if you're an atheist. It's like, I don't know if you remember the cartoon Calvin and Hobbes, and Calvin said, nobody's an atheist at exam time. So there's some time that we all feel like we want to pray. So we're going to talk about what that is. And then we're going to use some of the common prayers and passages in Buddhism. And we're going to go through them as a way of reviewing some of the ideas in Buddhism and also some of the, how to use them as tools for our everyday life. Okay. Maybe we could turn off one of the lights here. So, let's see which one is good. That one. Good. Okay, so meditation. For those of you who are new here tonight, you probably are very familiar with the word meditation and the fact that it's used all over the place by many different people, and a common misunderstanding about what meditation means, or maybe a different definition of meditation, is that it's a way to sit down and empty your mind. In Buddhism, we say it's not possible to empty your mind. It's not possible to think about nothing. We are always thinking about something. And the word meditation in Tibetan is gom, G-O-M. And that word means to become familiar with. This room is a gompa. It's a room. Pa means room. Gom means to become familiar with. So this is a room that we come to become familiar with our minds, to become familiar with ideas that we can incorporate into our lives to make our minds and hearts more peaceful and compassionate. So meditation is a tool that we use to become familiar with positive aspects of our mind. Now, in order to do that, there are two important things to do. First, you need to be able to train your mind to go in the direction that you want it to go, instead of letting it lead you where it wants to. So the first steps in meditation are to do things that put your body and your mind in a condition that's conducive to be able to focus and take control of your mind. Then once you have done that, then the second part is to use that focus to review things that you've learned and experienced and make them become part of your faith of conviction, which is what Buddhism is about. Okay, so the first thing we do is to put our bodies in the 7-point posture, because physical comfort promotes mental comfort. So it's important to have your body in a position in which you can eventually let it go and be able to focus on your mind. So if you're sitting in a chair, you want your feet to be flat on the floor comfortably. It might mean putting a cushion under your feet. If you're sitting on a cushion, you have your legs crossed and sit up straight. Now, whether you are sitting in a chair or on a cushion, it's very important to have your spine straight. In order to have your spine straight, you usually need to lift your hips up a little bit, even if you're sitting in a Western chair, because these chairs are very conducive to poor posture. It makes you want to slump backward, so your spine can't stack. You need to imagine your spine stacking like a stack of coins from your neck down to your bottom of your spine. And that does a couple of things. That, first of all, helps your skeleton support itself. When the skeleton is in a good posture, it supports itself and lets your muscles and the rest of your body relax. It also helps give all of your internal organs, including your lungs, all the room that they need to function well. So, feet flat or tucked up, spine straight. You want your arms out a little bit with your hands cupped, right hand cupped into the left hand. Thumbs touching. That is the way we do it in this tradition. And one of the things that this symbolizes is having a cup to receive the teachings. There are other meanings as well. And some people prefer to have their hands resting on their knees. There are different ways, and any of these are right, but in our tradition, this is the most common. Then you want your head just very slightly tilted forward. If it's tilted too far forward, you tend to want to fall forward and go to sleep. And if it's too far backward, it's overexcited, they say, and you might fall backward. It's not at a balanced posture, so you want your head slightly forward. You want your eyes softly closed with just enough opening to let a little light in so you're not tempted to go to sleep. That's really hard for beginners to do, so you might want to close them lightly all the way. But eventually, your goal is to be able to let a little bit of light leak in so that you're not tempted to go to sleep. Your jaw should be relaxed. Your tongue should be resting on the roof of your mouth behind your top teeth so that your mouth doesn't get dry. It takes time for us Westerners to get used to all these postures, but you'll find that if you make the effort to do it a little bit at a time, eventually you'll realize how very comfortable it is. So, that's that. Now, next, once we get our body in the right position, we want to start pulling in our minds. So first, pull your body, all your ideas, everything that's gone on today, pull it in. You were somewhere else, you got in your car, you drove here, you came in, you sat down, you're sitting, and so just think about your head being on your shoulders, and you're sitting here in this spot, in this room. You're pull it all in here together now. You can even take one part of your body at a time. Think about your head on your shoulders and your shoulders relaxing. Your spine nice and straight. Your bottom reaching the cushion. Okay, so you pull your mind and your body in here. And then next, we're going to count the breaths. So now we're going to start turning inward. Start paying attention to your breath going in and out of your body. Just be aware that your breath is going in and out. Now, some people like to try and focus on a candle flame or sounds, but it's really a recommendation to use the breath as a focus, because that's something that will always be with you. It's a tool that if you get used to using the tool of your breath, no matter where you are, that tool will be with you. And counting is a really good way to bring your mind to a neutral position. That's why when they say when you're angry or anxious and you just want to blurt something out, stop and count to 10. Why? Because that counting brings you to a neutral place, and from there, it's easier to get to a positive place. So we're going to count our breaths and count on the inhale. It forces you to concentrate more than if you're counting on the exhale. So breathe in, 1, and out. Then 2, and out. So do that to 10, and if you lose track, start over again from 1. Don't you love the sound of that train? I do. Okay, next, we're going to talk about 9-round breathing as another meditation technique. Now, Geshe-la, our resident teacher, talks about how every thought is a bit of energy, and our energy is always circulating throughout our body. You can't stop it. Energy is going round and round through all of our channels. There's like thousands of channels throughout our body through which our energy circulates. Now, there are times that we feel like we've got some negative thoughts stuck in our mind that we just can't get rid of. Just like, I should have said something to that guy because he just made me so mad, or I should have said this or that, and you're just stuck. You're perseverating on that thought that is driving you crazy, and you can't stop it. Well, why does that happen? Well, Geshe-la says that when there's a piece of negative energy that's generated from your mind, it gets stuck in one of those channels. It's blocked. So the energy can't flow freely. So we need to do something to try to unblock those channels. 9-round breathing is one meditation that can help to do that. And the way you do it is you start with the ring finger of your left hand, and you block the left nostril. You breathe in through the right one. Then you use the same finger to switch to the other side and breathe out through the left. Block the left, breathe in through the right. Block the right, breathe out through the left. Block the left, breathe in through the right. Block the right, breathe out through the left. So that's three. Then you take the ring finger of your right hand, block the right nasal passage, breathe in through the left. Block the left, breathe out through the right. Block the right. Block the left. Block the right. Block the left. So that's three more, make six. And then three rounds of breathing in and out through both nostrils. So that's a tool that you can use when you feel like your thoughts are stuck. And it may sound really crazy, but it really does work. You may need to do it 2, 3, or 4 times or more. But really try it if you're having a problem with some perseverative thoughts that are just making you crazy. Okay, now we go through all these other steps of bringing in your mind, getting your body in a restful position, bringing your mind into the spot, turning your mind inward, being able to focus. Just get us set up for the true goal of using meditation to become familiar with our minds. We have to tame our minds before we can use them the way we want to. And analysis is what the real purpose is, using meditation to think about what you've learned and apply it to your life and absorb the lessons. As we talked about in other classes, Buddhism, the philosophy of Buddhism, is really a way of getting to familiar with yourself and understanding why you think the way you do, why you behave the way you do, learning things and applying them to your life and experiencing it, having a faith of conviction, not taking something for truth because it's somebody told it to you or you read it in a book, but believing it because you've heard it, you've read it, you've thought about it, you've applied it to your life, you've tested it out, and you know it to be true for yourself. And if you can't get to where you accept things because you understand that it's the right thing for you and that it's really true for you, then you should reject it. So an example of an analytical meditation might be something like for a beginner, before you've had an opportunity to learn a lot of the different ideas and terms in Buddhism, might be something like, okay, I was driving on the highway, Interstate 40, and somebody cut me off in traffic, and it made me really angry. So you think about, what was that emotion that arose? Why was I angry because somebody else cut me off? Was I thinking that everybody should be considerate of me and my car and they personally meant to cause me harm? Did I think that the road should be, adjust its rules to what I want it to be? Did I think that somebody was trying to harm me personally? Did that feeling of anger help anything? So something like that, you know, you take some experience in your day that you would like to wish was different or felt better, and you think about what was that emotion that arose? Why did it come up? What contributed to it? Did it make things better? And if not, what about my thinking, my attitude about that? Could I change to make the situation better next time it comes up for me? So that's just one example. Now, first, I'm sorry that I meant to start this session with setting our intention. I really try to do that first thing. So our intention for being here tonight, for everybody having made the effort to make time in their busy days to get themselves here after a day of work, surely you're here to try and get something to help your minds be calmer and more peaceful. And so my intention tonight is that when you leave today, tonight, that you will have gotten at least some little bit of something that is helpful to your minds and hearts. So, before we go on, are there any questions about meditation? No questions. Okay. All right, let's go on to the next thing. This is just a little cartoon, Meditators Anonymous. My name is John, and I haven't had a think for 36 days. Okay, so what is Buddhism? Okay, when you study Buddhism, you're studying yourself, the nature of your body, speech, and mind, with the main emphasis being on the nature of your mind and how it works in everyday life. Buddhism is simple and practical in that it explains logically how happiness, peace, and satisfaction comes from the mind and not from a supernatural being in whom you have to believe. There's an emphasis on a faith of conviction. And in past classes, we talked about how in the West, we think emotions are separate from our logical mind. In Tibetan Buddhism, the definition of mind is not the brain. Mind is everything about us that is not physical. So in the West, it's very common for us to hear things like, oh, I know I shouldn't let that get me mad, but I can't help it. My mind says I shouldn't get mad, but my heart just, my emotions just get carried away, and I can't help it. Well, in Buddhism, that is a false statement, because all emotions come from the mind. And if you think about it, you think, for example, there might be somebody in politics, say, that you think is a really horrible person. You know, you just have learn a few things about them, and you every time you see that person's name come up in the news, you get angry and think they're stupid and they're awful. And then maybe someday you actually meet them in person and have a long conversation and find out that much of what you've learned in the papers, what you've learned from conversation and talk, were totally false, and they're actually a very intelligent and lovely person. So from that point on, you might think every time you see them or see things about them in the newspaper, you think, oh boy, they really don't understand that guy. That all that stuff, that's not the right thing. You know, somebody's writing a lot of lies about this person. Okay? So I'm sure you can all think of examples in your life of things that you had a whole mindset, a whole attitude about, until you got to know that person or situation more, then suddenly your mind is very different about them, and different feelings arise when you encounter that person or situation. And that's just evidence to show that emotions really are your thoughts and your attitude. They are not separate from. So next time you catch yourself thinking or saying, oh, I can't help how I feel, remember that's totally wrong. You can help how you feel, and you should help how you feel if what you're feeling is negative or anger or jealousy or pride or something different, because those emotions are not things that will make you feel happy and peaceful. And if your goal is to be happy and peaceful, then you need to stop yourself whenever you're feeling some of those negative emotions and see what you can do to change that. It's not easy, it's not quick, but it is very beneficial if you start working on it and keep working on it. It will change and you will feel better. You will feel happier and more peaceful. We talked about the faith of conviction. We mentioned it earlier tonight. And for those of you who haven't been here before, I just want to review that in Buddhism there are three different kinds of faith. The first kind of faith is kind of the organic kind of faith, or where just, you know, when you go outside and see stars, or you go in a beautiful cathedral, and you just have this sense of there's something outside of yourself. You're part of some greater plan or something bigger than yourself. That's organic kind of faith. And it's very real and valid. There's a second kind of faith where you believe something because somebody told you so. And there's an appropriate place for that even in Buddhism. But in Buddhism, if you're going to believe something because somebody tells you, it's very important, we really insist that you check out the qualities of the person of whose word you're believing. Don't just believe anything you hear just because somebody said it. It's up to you to make sure that the person that you're taking their word on is somebody with the ethics and the values that are correct and with which you agree, and you've really checked them out. And then the third faith is the faith of conviction, the one that we stress in Buddhism. And it's what we've been talking about earlier tonight, where you believe something because you learn it, you think about it, you research it, you test it out in your life, and you come to know that it is true because you have really thought about it and tested it in your own life. Any questions? Okay. All right. So now we're going to talk a little bit about prayer. Because prayer is something that is really important in everybody's life. We all do it, whether you believe in it or not, we do it. So we must all at some level have some belief in it. Now, what does it mean? It may mean something different to just about everybody. But prayer, like with other faiths or no faith, is very important in Buddhism too. And then there's the other question of, and who does a Buddhist pray to if we don't believe in a creator or a supreme being? So, prayer can be defined as a wish, an aspiration, an appeal for support, okay? But it always should be something that helps your mind, okay? And this includes mantras. And I just wanted to touch on that briefly because our teacher, Geshe Gelug, talked about this sometimes, how the word mantra is thrown around in the West just like the word karma and the word meditation, and you know, there's all these words that are used so much in the West in ways that really are not what the Buddhist definition is. And the word mantra is thrown around like something that you repeat to yourself over and over again. Okay, well, in a way that's correct, but what Argeshi says is a mantra is something that helps your mind. So it's a phrase or a short prayer that you repeat to yourself. You do repeat it, but it should help your mind. If you just say over and over again, I'm going to the store, 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 well, you know, that's your, some people would say that's a mantra, you know, it's something that they're repeating over and over again. Well, is it something that's helping their mind? Well, maybe it is, but not likely. So a mantra is a phrase or a sentence that you use to help your mind. Now, some of the mantras that you will be introduced to here at the Kadampa Center are in words, a language that you probably do not understand unless you've studied foreign languages, you know, studied Sanskrit or Tibetan. You might not understand what the words are. Like one of our most common mantras is the mantra of compassion. It's called Om Mani Padme Hum. Now, most people don't understand what those words mean. Or why do we keep using those Sanskrit words in this modern day if most people don't even understand what they mean? Well, Argeshi explained how some of these words and terms in Sanskrit have been repeated from the beginning of time, you know, 2,500 years ago, maybe longer. I could be wrong, but I think that some of these Sanskrit mantras were even around before the time of the Buddha, but at least since that time. And the sounds that the Sanskrit words produce, if I remember correctly, our words are sounds that resonate with our chakras, with our energy centers. And so throughout all the millenniums, in saying that mantra in the original Sanskrit language is said to help to touch and stimulate some energy centers inside of ourselves. And then, of course, you can, you know, work with our teachers to understand the translation of them. But even without knowing the translation, if used correctly, it could be something that if it feels right to you, if when you say it, it helps calm you, and many people say that happens for them. And if it doesn't for you, then do not use it. But the reason that it does work for so many people to recite these mantras in Sanskrit is because it just helps resonate, it harmonizes with their inside, and in that way helps to calm their minds. And that is the reason for using it. If it doesn't do that, then don't use it. Find some other phrase that helps your mind to be calm and use that one. Okay, so back to prayer. So, who do Buddhists pray to? Now, in most faith systems, when you pray, you're appealing to some superior being, or creator, or some other superior being, or the saints. You know, I was raised Roman Catholic, and we would pray to the saints, and ask these saints to do things for us, to create a situation for us, to make a test easier, or to help us pass a test, or to help make us better, or, you know, it's appeal to make a change in us or in our environment. Well, we Buddhists believe that no one else can change us. We are the only ones who can change ourselves. So we are not praying to some creative or supreme being. In a way, you're just praying to yourself. to your higher self, trying to appeal to what you know your true nature is, that of a wise, positive, good person. And you set aspirations and reinforce those positive intentions. It can also be an appeal to others, seen and unseen, for their example and support, remembering that you are the only one who can change yourself. Now, for an example, which here, example, you can look at the qualities of the Buddha or other holy beings as qualities that you aspire to. Just as like in your own life, you might find some role models like a teacher or a world leader. And you say, wow, I'd really like to be just like that person. How did that person become that way? So I'm going to look to that person for an example. And in that way, you're using prayer to focus on the qualities of the person that you aspire to as an example. And it don't need to be a Buddhist person. For example, Mother Teresa, Geshe Gelug, is always talking about what an amazing, wonderful, compassionate person she is and how we can use her example. Or it can be the Pope or Nelson Mandela or anybody in your life, past or present. Now, we talked a little, I think here it said, appeal to others, seen and unseen. Now, this is just a really basic Buddhist class, and like I said, you might encounter some ideas and thoughts or definitions that might seem a little strange to you without having learned more about Buddhist terminologies and ideas and philosophy. But one thing that we talk about sentient beings, and sentient beings can be those that we see physically, but there can be some sentient beings that do not have a physical body that we might be able to see. So when we are praying to the Buddhas, or even say like in other faiths, you might be praying to the saints, those are not people that you can see. It's kind of comparable in that you feel their essence or their spirit even though you can't see them. So I just thought I'd throw that in, but if it confuses you, just let it go, okay? Okay. Now, another very important way to use prayer is as a self-help tool. It's an important use of formal prayers. You can use it as a meditational tool to guide you through the learning process or understanding of the Dharma. Just as in other faiths, you might learn there's the, I forget even the name of the prayer. I was raised Catholic and did it for so many years, but there's a prayer that's all the statement of all the beliefs of Catholicism. Or you might say Our Father or Hail Mary, and those in that prayer, it's helping you to learn about the role of Our Father who is in heaven, or our Mother, Holy Mary, Mother of God. Okay, so it's helping you to learn something as well as helping to support you. And same with the Buddhist prayers. And you can use it as a self-help meditation to help your mind through a difficult time. So we're going to go through some prayers. And Christopher, I made paper copies of these so you can follow along. And if it helps you to write notes, you're welcome to do that. So these are some... There's many, many, and of course I picked out the ones that I thought have been helpful to me as a guideline, and I hope they're helpful to you as well. And the first one, one of the first prayers that I ever encountered when coming to the Kadampa Center, is the Four Immeasurables. And I just find this to be endlessly helpful, because this gives you a definition for love, compassion, great love, and equanimity. So, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. And that is what love is. So in all these around the world, you keep hearing people from all different walks of life saying, love yourself, love your neighbor, love your enemies. Well, what does that mean? How can I love my enemy in the same way that I love my husband or my family? Well, by using this definition, I can start to understand how I can do that. I can wish someone to have happiness and the cause of happiness, whether they're my husband or family, or if there's someone in a war zone across the other, on the other side of the world, or even somebody that I think is not a very nice person. You know, because if I can wish them to be happy, maybe if they had some happiness, they might be a nicer person. So those are, it's an attitude that I can work on developing to help me to not have these extremes of anger and attitude, negative attitude toward others in the world. And the next sentence, may all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Compassion, same thing. You know, now I can understand how to, what kind of a mindset to have toward people, whether they're close to me or far away, whether I like them or not. I can start having a little calmer attitude, and maybe then if I can neutralize my mind a little more and say, oh, I may not like them, but I still don't want them to suffer, then maybe I can start working on how to detonate some situations. You know, if I've got a boss that I just think is the devil incarnate, you know, and I just really don't like that person, and he makes my life miserable. Well, if I can just say, okay, maybe I don't like them very well, and they're making my life really miserable, but let me try and develop these attitudes to him. Maybe if I could just, and no matter how much I don't like them, I can wish that he can be happy, and I can wish that he not suffer. And if I can hold it in my mind when I'm getting yelled at or having a terrible day, well, maybe it will take a little of the edge off, and just maybe that little change in my attitude might have some effect on another person. And if it doesn't have an effect on another person, well, at least it's having a better effect on me. Maybe it'll start bringing my blood pressure down and my stress level down, right? And it can only be good. It can only be good for yourself first and then for others. And then the third, may all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. That means you just want them, everybody, to have the positive feelings and attitudes all of the time. And if they, and if you can have that attitude of wishing that for them, maybe it will help spread that feeling and make it a little better place. If everybody felt like this, wouldn't it be wonderful? And then, may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, this, that last sentence, attachment for friends and hatred for enemies, can cause a lot of confusion and like, oh, what is that, when you first encounter it. But what that means is the equanimity of not being so attached to these people that no, whether they do right or wrong, it doesn't matter, I'm going to stick up for them, versus these people over here that are really horrible, and no matter, even if they do something good, I can't really go along with that, you know. So it just polarizes you so much. And if you can start feeling, applying these attitudes of love and compassion and great love toward them, you're not going to feel so polarized. And it just might open up your mind a little bit to let those people that you're attached to maybe be a little more human, and it's okay that if they make mistakes once in a while, you're still going to love them and wish them well. And these enemies on this side, no matter how awful they are, maybe it will relax your mind and say, well, maybe they're right about something. Maybe we could talk this out. So it makes you less polarized and more balanced. So that's why I love this prayer. And I hope that it can help you sometime too. Okay, the next one, the foundation of all good qualities. Now, way back in one of the first classes, we talked about the Four Noble Truths. So that's the basis of the Buddhist beliefs. It was the first teaching of the Buddha. And it was, the first noble truth was that suffering exists. The second is that it has a cause. Third is it can be ended. And the fourth is there's a way to do it. And one of the ways to do it is a course, I guess you might call it, of teachings called the Lam Rim. Lam Rim means the graduated path toward enlightenment. And it's a curriculum, I guess you might call it, that is a common teaching in Buddhism. And it teaches you step, first you think this, then it leads you to that idea, will lead you to that. And slowly, slowly, it starts helping you to think about different things that then help you to understand karma and how it affects your life and all of the other, the whole continuum of Buddhist philosophy. So the Lam Rim, this prayer, the foundation of all good qualities, is actually about 14 verses long. And we're just going to review the first four verses tonight. But this helps, this is one of the continuum of mindset that might help you to gradually understand some of the basic ideas of Buddhism. And of course, because it's a prayer, the writing is stylized, it's like poetry, okay? So it's not just sentences, so we have to work a little bit with the language here. Okay, so the first sentence is, the foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. That means the first important thing you need to do, if you are looking for a way to change your mind, is to first find a qualified teacher or teachings. And so that's why it's really important and good that you, if you feel like what you have been thinking and doing is not working, it's good that you're searching out for something else. And this may or may not be it, but at least you're trying it. And if it feels right, if you think that this is the right way, then it's important that you try and find a really good teacher. Now, we are fortunate here that we actually have excellent physical teachers, our geshes and our nuns and other high-level students. They're really excellent and qualified teachers, and we also have really good books here. Some people are not as fortunate to have physical teachers, and they might need to find reliable book resources or videos or whatever. But we're very lucky here at the Kadampa Center to have qualified physical teachers, amazing, amazing teachers, and to know that any of the resources that you might find, like here in our bookstore or recommended by the center, are quality, authentic teachings. So the first thing is, like we talked about before, if you're going to have a teacher, make sure that teacher is qualified. Because if you just listen to anybody that who just says they're a Buddhist or says that they know what they're doing without checking them out, they might really lead you on a way of thinking that would just not healthy or valid. So that's what that first sentence means. The foundation of learning good things for yourself is to find a qualified teacher. And then correct devotion to him is the root of the path. That means to correctly check him out and to have the right attitude and be a good student. Because you can have the best teacher in the world, and if you're not a very good student, you're not really going to get anything out of it. And then by clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely on him with great respect. So just like with any qualified teacher, it's important that once you've validated that teacher, that you apply effort and you respect them and you apply, put the work in, because you are the only one who can change yourself. The best teacher in the world cannot do it for you, but if you apply the right attitude and respect and effort, the best teacher in the world will make a big difference in you, because you want it and you'll work on it. The next phrase, understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence. This talks about that concept that we talked about in another class of the precious human life. That is a very important basic belief in Buddhism, that this life that we have is very precious, and it's very, it's said that the cause for being born as a human is a result of a lot of positive merit in past lives. So we have earned this human body, this mind, this condition in which we are able to seek out and learn and rationalize and make changes in ourselves. Not, you look at all the other sentient beings, the animals, the insects. Yes, maybe there are some ways that they can make their lives better and have some ability to rationalize on some level, but not at the same level that us as humans can. So it's very important that we recognize how valuable our human lives are and that we should not waste them. Next, this life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. This phrase reminds us of another very basic and important Buddhist belief, and that is that everything is impermanent, including this life. And we know two things about death. We know that it is definite. We're all definitely going to die. This physical body is going to die. And the other thing we know is the time of death is uncertain. And unfortunately, we all have had, there's been a big thing in the news recently about the explosions in Paris. And we know none of those people thought that was going to be their last day. We don't know. Some people who have a terminal illness and are sure that they're going to be dying in a week or two, they might last months or years. So we do not know when death is going to happen. But we know that whatever, if you embrace the Buddhist philosophy of karma, of this moment creates the next moment and the next one, then at the end of this physical life, whatever merit or negative energy that we've accumulated will carry on to the next life. So it's really important that at the time of death, your mind is at its most positive that it can be. And since we don't know when that will happen, it really behooves us to work very hard to take advantage of this precious human life in every moment, work at trying to make it the most positive and peaceful that we can be, so that we will be ready at that moment of death to continue the carrying on our positive merit as much as we can. And the last one from this prayer tonight, finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. So if we really believe, as karma tells us, that any positive action or thought results in more positive actions and results. Every positive cause has a positive result. Every negative cause has a negative result. It's really important to do our best to have more positive causes to have more positive results. And that is something, even if you don't believe in an afterlife or rebirth, it will help you in this life as well. Experiment. Try it out. Check it out. Any questions about this so far? Again, this is just the first four of about 14 verses of the whole prayer, but these four verses are the beginning thoughts that you should meditate on in order to lead you to a more comprehensive understanding of other things in the Buddhist philosophies. Okay, here's another prayer that is very helpful. I have found to be very helpful in neutralizing my attitude in difficult situations. And it, even if the environment and beings are filled with the fruits of negativity and unwished for sufferings pour down like rain, I seek your blessings to take these miserable conditions as a path by seeing them as causes to exhaust the results of my negative karma. Now, what that does is, if I'm in a really awful situation, it's just miserable, there's many different ways of thinking about it. You might say, oh my God, it's just so miserable, I just want to end it all. Or, this is never going to change. Or, like, why is this all happening to me? I didn't do anything. Why is this happening to me? Well, we talked about how with the belief of karma, if we are experiencing a negative situation, there is some reason why we're in it. And if we can accept it, say, okay, well, why am I in this situation? What are the causes and conditions that put me here? Were there some negative attitudes or things that I've done that put me into this position? And if so, what were they, and how can I make a change in them? Now, if you're a card-carrying Buddhist, really what you're thinking, too, is that a part of why you're in this situation could be something from past lives. But even if you just start with what's in this life, most of the time, you will probably, if you have this attitude of, well, let me see, like, boy, this is a really bad situation. What causes and conditions brought me here? What can I do to make it different? Right away, at least that helps you shift your attitude and make it more tolerable, or maybe help you to get out of it. This is another wonderful attitude changer, in my opinion. Master Shantideva has this little prayer. Unruly beings are as unlimited as space. They cannot possibly all be overcome. Another spelling problem. However, if I overcome the thoughts of anger alone, this will be equivalent to vanquishing all enemies. We have all experienced situations where there was just a bunch of people who were angry or negative or, you know, just, you know, kind of a black cloud over their head. And then there would be one person who's just calm and serene in spite of what's going on around. And you think, wow, you know, how can that person be so calm? And somehow seeing that helps, may help others calm down as well. But it's just like, how can that person be so calm? And it's because they have here, okay, here's the other part of it. Where would I possibly find enough leather with which to cover the surface of the earth? Yet wearing leather just on the soles of my shoes is equivalent to covering the earth with it. So if you can use other things that you learn and take to your heart and your mind to try to equalize, neutralize your mind, no matter where you are, what kind of horrible things are going on around you, you can keep your own sense of calm, and that will always be a benefit, certainly to you, and most likely to other people around as well. We all like leaders who can really keep their calm in the midst of all kinds of upheaval, don't we? And they're usually the ones who can make the best decisions, just as if we can train our own minds to be calm, no matter where we are, we will be making the best decisions, and at least we will be feeling peaceful no matter what's going on around. Okay, here is something that we talked about in other classes and again a little bit tonight. This is a wonderful prayer. This is one by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And if every day you can say this to yourself, every day think as you wake up, today I am fortunate to have woken up. I'm alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to have kind thoughts toward others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can. If you could wake up each day and say this and really try to believe it and take it into your heart, it will make a substantial difference in your attitude. I guarantee it. Sooner or later, it will make a difference. This is another saying by His Holiness. He says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. In all circumstances, it's very helpful to practice compassion. One of our nuns was giving an example of this. She says, you know, many years ago, I really, really wanted this certain pair of shoes. And I just couldn't wait to go and buy those shoes. And I saved my money. I was going to go buy those shoes. And she was a social worker in the schools at the time. And there was a child who she noticed their shoes just really weren't fitting, or they were falling apart or something. So she made the decision, instead of using that money to buy those pair of shoes for herself, she bought them for that child. She bought some shoes for that child. And she says, you know, I can't even remember now what those shoes that I wanted looked like or why I wanted them, but I sure remember the smile on that child's face. So, you know, it's just a little way of reminding yourself that when you do good things for other people, it really changes your heart. And I'm sure you can all think of examples in your own life in which that has been true. It always feels right to do the right thing for others. It will make yourself happy, and it will make others happy. Here's another wonderful saying. Be kind whenever possible. It is always possible. Sometimes I have to use this little one on myself when I'm not feeling too kindly towards somebody. I say, no, just try it. You know, just try, Elise. Just try to be kind. It is possible. And it always has a good result when I can remember this and try to do it a little bit. Because sometimes it feels like, you know, just somebody's just so nasty. How can I possibly be kind? But it is possible in some little way. Okay, here, the 8 worldly hopes and fears. This is something that I often refer to. And this suffering comes from attachment to the qualities on the left and avoidance of the qualities on the right. In almost every day, in everything that we do, that we feel polarized toward, either we are so attached to wanting a reward, wanting praise, wanting good health, wanting fame, that we'll do anything to get that, even if it causes harm to others. And we are so averse to the idea of punishment and criticism or getting sick or having a bad reputation that we do everything we can to avoid those things. So it leaves us feeling so polarized, like we were talking about with attachment to friends and hatred for enemies. They're such polarizing ideas. And an important concept in Buddhism is a concept that we talked about in another class called emptiness, meaning that things, ideas, situations in themselves don't have that. They just are. We're the ones that put the definition of good and bad and want and don't want. We're the ones that put the judgment on those things. And sometimes we're so busy judging and prejudging that we don't just stop and look at the situation objectively. It's just something that is. It's something that's come about because of causes and conditions. So if we just stop and think, oh, I really want this, or I really want to be rewarded for this, I really don't want to be punished, or, no, and you're just so busy putting layers of judgment on it that you can't just stop and look at the situation objectively and think of why it's there, what are the components of it, and what are, if it's something that's not helpful, well then how can you change it to be helpful or better? So these worldly hopes and fears are the end of the spectrums, and we should always try to be right in the middle. It's like when we're afraid of doing something, well, why are we afraid of doing it? Is it something that we think that we should do, that's the right thing to do, but, oh, if we do it, I might get criticized or punished for it? Well, like, why is that the determining factor? You know, it's put yourself in the middle and forget the reward and punishment thing. Is it the right thing to do? Then do it. And don't have the concern of the reward or the punishment. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Okay. So, we've come to the end of this section. Are there any questions about anything in general, about anything that we've covered? I know many of you are here for the first night, and there was a lot of things that you've missed, but hopefully that I haven't confused you too much with what we've presented tonight. And for those of you who've been coming every week, I hope that this has also been helpful for you. Are there any questions? None? Okay. Well, yes, yes.
In the Four Immeasurables, sometimes I've seen the translation of may all sentient beings have happiness and the true causes of happiness.
Right.
So we sometimes want to distinguish between temporary happinesses,
mm-hmm.
or temporary causes of happiness, and then what is true and lasting, which is the ultimate benefit of others, enlightenment.
Right. And for those who didn't hear, I think what you said was one of the translations for the Four Immeasurables. Let's see. Let's go back to it. Yeah. Okay. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes, true causes of happiness, you're saying? Right. Well, that is very good. And the way to use these prayers is to start out with that. And as you were saying, that you should really think about and study each of these sentences. It's not just something you say and, you know, just hope by saying it a lot, it's going to sink in, okay? Now, really the right way to use this prayer or any of these prayers and sayings that we've reviewed tonight is to really deconstruct it. And that's why it's important, if you're going to use this philosophy as your guide of a way that will help you, like we talked about in other classes, it's really important that if you're searching for some kind of a philosophy or mindset to help you, if you have not found a construct that is helping your mind, it's important to look around and settle on one, at least for a while, that you think is the right one for you, and then just use that one. We call that taking refuge in one way of thinking, at least one way of thinking at a time. Because if you're using a little bit of Buddhism and a little bit of Catholicism and a little bit of this and that, and first of all, the definitions, the terminology, it's going to get all confused, and it's going to be confusing. Well, this way, today I'm going to think this way, but it's more convenient today to think that way, and it really won't give you the right kind of a structure. But if you're using the structure of Buddhism, then it's important for you to work at understanding the terms, the theories, test them out. So in that way, you would then start applying the theories in the Buddhist philosophy to say the first sentence, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. Okay, so then you say, okay, what does happiness mean? Okay, well, if you study more, you learn that happiness means absence of negative thought. Happiness is a positive mind. Okay, so if happiness means having a positive mind, what's the negative? Okay, so to have a positive mind would remove the negativities. Or what are the negativities? Well, the negativities would be the non-virtuous actions and the three poisons that we talked about in previous classes. So you identify what those are, then you say, well, anger is one of the poisons. If I have anger in my mind, it's not going to be positive. It's not going to be peaceful. I'm not going to be happy. So what does anger mean? Okay, so anger is the exaggeration of negative qualities. Okay, so, you know, go on and on. So you're going to take one sentence at a time and really deconstruct it and use the Buddhist way of thinking and their definitions to really delve into what that means and how it can help you. And that is really the right way to use these prayers as tools to help your life and to help change your attitudes and make you more peaceful and happy. So thank you for that. And in that way, you are, by implication or practice, finding out what true happiness is. Because a Buddhist would never define happiness as just having something that you want. In fact, having the absence of desire, because having something you want means having something you desire, and desire generates more desire, and a true someone who really follows the Buddhist philosophy would not define happiness as having something you desire. It's having the absence of desire and satisfaction with what you have or what is. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, so let's go back forward here. Okay. All right, so we're coming to the end of this phase with this five classes of Buddhism in a nutshell. There are many other ways to learn. I really highly recommend the Sunday morning teachings. If you're really new to Buddhism, you haven't had a chance to delve into do a lot of reading or anything, on Sunday mornings at 10:30, we have a highly qualified teacher, Geshe Gelug, and if he's not here, then someone who is also very qualified takes his place, but he's usually here on Sunday mornings at 10:30, and the teachings that he gives are really appropriate for someone who knows nothing about Buddhism or someone who's been training for 30 years, because what he really tries to be practical and talk about things that help your mind on a practical day-to-day level. So I really highly recommend that as a start. Meditation 101 is the next introductory class, and that's going to be starting next Tuesday for 5 weeks. So it's 5 weeks of basic instruction on meditation. Then probably after the first of the year, there'll be another Buddhism in a Nutshell class. So if you haven't had a chance to come to all of these sessions and you want to, you'll have another opportunity to do that. Now, once you've come to either one or both of these introductory classes, the Buddhism in a Nutshell and or Meditation 101, the next level of basic instruction is our Discovering Buddhism class. And you can read more about that on our website. But those are usually on Monday nights. And it's a very beginning class, but a little bit more in depth than this Buddhism in a Nutshell. In Buddhism in a Nutshell, we covered a bunch of terms just in 5 weeks. Discovering Buddhism, they'll take one of those terms like karma or finding a teacher or samsara and rebirth. And they'll take that one topic and study that one topic for 5 or 6 weeks. And then they'll take another topic for 5 or 6 weeks and go on. And the whole course, if you attended all of them, which is fantastic, by the way, I've done it, will take 2 years. And you think, oh my God, 2 years, but boy, it goes by in a flash. And it's amazing how you'll learn some stuff that will definitely help your life if it's right for you. Okay, so always check our website and the calendars for visiting teachers and other opportunities. My understanding is that Venerable Robina Corton is going to be coming in March. And if you've never experienced this teacher, she is really amazing. But we also have other amazing teachers that travel internationally that sometimes come through here. And, I mean, our own teacher that we have here every Sunday, and he also teaches Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo. We actually have two Geshe's that teach on Sunday. They are so amazing. They actually are invited to teach internationally at times. That's why they will often be away during the summer and sometimes other parts of the year, because many other centers do not have the incredible good fortune that we have of having such a highly qualified teacher right here. So they have to depend on inviting teachers to come to their centers to teach once in a while. And our amazing Geshe's are two of the people that get invited other places at times to do that. So we also have the fortune sometimes of having other teachers come here, and it gives a little different perspective, a little different way of presenting material. But Venerable Robina Corton has been here many times, and if you have the opportunity to hear her when she comes, I really invite you to do that. And then sign up for a listserv announcements. You will find information on our website and how to do that, so that when there are teachers or events happening here, who here had the opportunity to see the sand mandala that was here last week? You did? And you? The sand mandala is a really amazing, special opportunity. And you're very fortunate, there will be another chance for you in the near future to see one if you haven't. And that's going to be at Meredith College, February 9, 10, and 11. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in February. Geshe Sangpo will be creating a sand mandala, a green tower mandala, at Meredith College in their student union those 3 days, 9, 10, 11 of February. And soon, Chris, when will the pictures and the time lapse of the mandala be on our website or Facebook? So just kind of watch our Facebook and our website if you want to see the creation of the mandala that was here. It's a wonderful experience in terms of just, if you just think of it as a work of art, but what makes it so wonderful, it's a really moving spiritual experience as well. Even if it's something you don't completely believe in, there's just something about it that really touches hearts and minds. Okay, so some of the resources that you can use. SPMT, we talked about how this Kadampa Center is a member of the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, and that just means it's like a quality assurance organization that ensures that whatever we teach here, the books that we have, the materials, the supplies, everything are authentic and dependable. So, and there's a website, SPMT, that, you know, if you have questions about definitions of, you know, what is karma, what is the Buddha, what are the prayers, whatever, you can go to that website, and the information that you find there, you can depend on as being quality. And also Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive, LYWA website, Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive. Lama Yeshe is the founder of the FPMT. Okay, he's one of the first Tibetan teachers that taught in the West in the 80s, and he helped start all the centers, Buddhist centers that are in the Western world. than any books that are written by or endorsed by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. If you're looking for a book about Buddhism, you know, oh, is this a good one or not? Well, if His Holiness has His name attached to it, if it was written by Him, which really would be a transcript of one of His teachings, or if it's another teacher and He endorses it, you can feel quite confident that it's got quality information in it. Yes. If you go to the website and it says something about membership or sign up for our bulletin or something, also on the bulletin that you can, and you can get one on the front desk that goes out every week, you can, there's information about it here. I get it says if you to find more detail about all that's happening at Kadampa Center and to receive email announcements, go to our website. Okay. So honestly, I haven't looked at it myself in so long because I've been a member forever. So if you have any problems, just, you know, you could call the center during the day. Our center manager is here during the day almost every work day. She's amazing and she will help you. Okay, thank you so much. I hope that something that you have seen or heard here is of benefit to you and of all sentient beings. I appreciate your attention. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to, you can email me at outreach@kadampa-center.org. I'm on a management team, so if you go to the website, you forget my email address or anything, just go to the website, look up who we are, and you'll see me there in the management team, and you can email me through there. And I just want to, before we leave, acknowledge Chris Baranski, our amazing media guy who's been here every week, and I really appreciate that's how you can all hear me and how you can all see all my slides. And Christopher Curry has been a wonderful volunteer helping you all come in and show where you get your shoes, put your shoes, and he's really dedicated a lot of time, and I really appreciate it. So thank you so much. And thank you all for coming. Good night. Drive safely.